ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Welcome back, everybody. After the festival days, when we have a little extra time to hear and chant, it always feels like we need to get back as soon as possible. Doesn't it? Yeah. Okay, so here we are. And we have today an opportunity to hear some of the instructions that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave. Yesterday we heard a description of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as given by Karabhajana Muni. And he told about the power and the characteristics of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In a verse that we read, Jayam sada paribhavaknam abhishta doham tirtaspadam shiva varinchi nutam sharanyam brityartiham pranatapala babaptipotam vande mahapurusha te charanaravindam. Worshipping the Mahapurush, the lotus feet of the Mahapurush, which is really the goal of life. Thank you, I feel much better now. And then he gave various characteristics. First of all, he said, the lotus feet of the Mahapurush, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, are fit to be meditated upon. And we noted that that was a very important statement because there are various objects of meditation. That's an understatement. And not all of them are worthy to or fit to be meditated upon because they're of a lower nature. We talked in some detail about why by meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord one becomes elevated. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, we didn't mention, mam cha yo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan pramapuya kalpate. By rendering devotional service, which includes this meditation, dhyayam, where you place your mind is a huge thing. I mean, it's practically everything. And Deyam Sada, where he's saying, you can do this all the time. You feel free to fully meditate always on Krishna's lotus feet, on Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet. And we described how even if one isn't very highly qualified in any way, if one follows in the footsteps of those who are, then one gets the same benefit that they do, just by the power of this following in the footsteps. So we talked about the insults of material nature upon the soul, how having a material body is actually an insult to the soul. By identifying with the body, not just having a body, but one who identifies with the material body is actually in a kind of a ridiculous situation. Identifying with something that's not oneself and saying, this is me. As Prabhupada used to describe, an insane asylum oftentimes has people who assume various identities. Somebody might be, who's this? Napoleon. You never seen pictures of Napoleon? He's famous for that. Someone may say, I'm Napoleon. Someone else might say, I am Sigmund Freud. And people assume various false identities. And those who have taken on a material body and identify themselves with the material body are in a not only a compromised situation, but a rather ridiculous situation. It's insanity, really. Paribhavagnam means we're insulted by this identification with the material body. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lifts us out of that. The meditation on his lotus feet lifts us out of that situation. Abhishta doham, and not only that, then we talked about how he doesn't just leave us at aham brahmasmi, I'm not my body, but we also are given something positive to work for. We have positive stress. We have a goal that we're climbing towards. And it's the most worthy goal. It's attaining our original relationship, or reestablishing our original relationship with Krishna, and that fulfills all our desires. Abhishta Doham. Krishna's name is, he has many names, but as Prabhupada used to say, his another name is Avanchatita, which means that he fulfills a devotee's desire beyond what that person can imagine. Then we said Tirthaspadam, that he is the repository of all the holy places. Even if one can't go to the various holy places, recommended that one go spend some time in Vrindavan, some time in Mayapur, Navadvip Dham, and Jagannath Puri, especially those three dhams, because in Kali Yuga those are the most important dhams. All the other dhams have lost their power to one degree or another, but not Navadvip or Vrindavan. And Arajo Bhagavan Vrajesha Tanayatta Dhamma Vrindavana. Vrindavan Dham and Navadvip Dham are non-different from Krishna. So when we go there and we just walk around, we're doing Padasevanam. And there's a unique way that one can remember Krishna by being in the Dham. But if one can't go to the Dham, Tirthaspadam, if one bows down to the lotus feet of Krishna, of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rather, who is Krishna, one gets the resultant effect of going to all the holy dhams. We consider that a good deal, right? Tirthaspadam. And then we heard Shiva Varinchi Nutam Sharanyam, that this is one of those things that they're doing it, why shouldn't you? Shiva, Brahma, the two most exalted souls in the universe, and they're taking shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Why shouldn't you be, if they are? And then we heard Brityardiham, Pranatapala, that if one's a servant of Lord Chaitanya and considers oneself a servant of the servants of Lord Chaitanya, then all of one's difficulties in life will be diminished by that service attitude. Brityardiham, and how Krishna, how Lord Chaitanya is very kind to his servants. One example was given by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur of Vasudev the leper, and how he had taken shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu had benedicted him in amazing ways. He was a leper, was Vasudev, and Mahaprabhu embraced him and gave him pure devotional service. And also, he cured his leprosy and benedicted him that if he kept chanting and teaching the holy names to others, then he would never fall victim to pride. Brityardiham Pranatapala. Pranata, those who bow down to the Lord's lotus feet, Pranata, Palapavabdipotam, the Lord's lotus feet are like a boat. And we talked a lot about that boat that carries one across the material world. We quoted from the 10th canto, 2nd chapter, a verse that the demigods spoke in prayer to Lord Krishna within the womb, where they said that those who just approach the boat, which is described as the process of devotional service given by the acharyas, find that the ocean has shrunk to the size of the water contained within a hoofprint of a calf. You can easily step over it. So powerful is the process, following the process, the authorized process given by the acharya, that if you approach it with full intention of following it, even if you feel yourself a little bit incapable, if you try to follow that process, the Lord makes special dispensation, compensation for your shortcomings. It helps to shrink it so you can cross over. You don't even need the boat. You can step over because the process is so powerful. So trust the process. Potam, bhavabdipotam, bhavabdipotam. You can cross over the ocean of material existence by boarding the boat of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet. Malini called in and she gave a verse from the first verse in a chapter in the Madhya Lila about how potent following Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is. And even one who is deficient can become successful by following the process of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by his mercy. Vande Mahapurusha Te Charanaravindam. And that He's worshipped. His lotus feet is worshipped. Vande Mahapurushate Charanaravindam. We offer our respectful obeisances to his lotus feet. And we talked about how nobody's better than Lord Chaitanya. He's the best of the best. And if one can simply align oneself with Lord Chaitanya, and especially by aligning oneself with his movement, he has a mission. He came with a mission to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And we have to do something. You have to work somewhere for someone. And if you can get this work, it's the best work in the universe. What kind of work you do? I work for Lord Chaitanya. What do you all do? Well, I'm a messenger. I just carry his message everywhere. And if you can get that work as messenger, and you can write it when you go into another country, you can write it on your immigration form. When they ask you occupation, just put messenger. And say, what do you do? I carry messages. What messages are you carrying? For Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You should chant Hare Krishna. And anywhere you go, everyone you meet, teach them about this. And also, you can use all your skills, all your intelligence to think, how can I best spread Krishna consciousness all over the world? And that way you remain connected to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave many instructions to his intimate disciples. Some of them are on the level of Vaidhi Bhakti, the beginning stage of devotional service. Others of them are on a very elevated stage, describing Raga Anuga Bhakti and Bhava Bhakti, Prema Bhakti, and so forth. And I want to read a few verses to give a flavor of what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught regarding the beginning stages of devotional service, how one gets involved in devotional service in the first place, and what are some of the steps that one should take in one's daily life in order to become advanced in devotional service. Does that sound like an okay idea?
Yes.
You're all in favor of that?
Yes.
Okay, sadhu, sadhu, good. All right, good, good. Let's look at the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'd also like a third canto if I could, just because I'm a little greedy up here and I got this table. I want to start filling it up. Because this opening to this Madhya Lila chapter 22 reminds me that there are several places in the Bhagavatam where we can look and see what is the basic process of devotional service. It's given step by step. Anukramishyati. And if you follow this step by step, then you're guaranteed to come to the perfect stage. And who wouldn't want to be in on this conversation? When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu meets Sanatana Goswami and gives him instruction about devotional service. Thank you. Look at that, the glories of devotional service. Okay. We'll look at some parallels. So I'm looking at Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 22, the process of devotional service. And the author first offers his obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and says he's an ocean of transcendental mercy. And then he says that even though the subject matter of bhakti yoga is very confidential, Mahaprabhu has manifested it so nicely even in this age of Kali, in the age of quarrel. So there's great hope because Age of Kali is a contentious age. People become overwhelmed with envy and there are arguments everywhere. In practically every sphere, there's polarization. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is glorified as one who can give such sound instruction that he helps his followers to overcome all this polarization and all the confusion that comes from conflicting philosophies. And I propose also that if one carefully reads Srila Prabhupada's books regularly, one will become immune to the confusion that arises from various conflicting philosophies and will be fully satisfied with the direction that he or she is moving in devotional service by reading Srila Prabhupada's books. Don't estrange yourself from Prabhupada's books, because he was empowered to write in such a way that he could help us to understand practically the teachings of the previous acharyas in a way that was relevant to our lives, which is amazing considering the fact that he came from a very early age in Bengal, had no acquaintance with the American culture or other world cultures, but was empowered, and this is what an empowered devotee does, an acharya, observes people of the world and is able to take the conclusions of scripture and present them in such a way that people can take them up and understand them and be guided properly. So my overarching point is that mainly confusion comes from not applying the process strictly enough. And if one can bring this idea, this principle into one's life, that the reason that I feel confused or the reason I feel unsatisfied is simple. It's not complicated. It's simple. It's because I'm not strictly following the simple path. And there is a simple path to follow. Chant Hare Krishna and read Prabhupada's books. It works every time. And not doing that enough is the cause of feeling anxiety or confusion about various other options that one may have, including rampant materialism or abandoning the process of devotional service altogether. That happens quite quickly when one doesn't hear and chant properly. If one doesn't hear and chant enough, one will then cross a line and begin to consider that the material world is not a bad idea after all. And that's when Maya starts to drive one's senses again off into the wilderness. And then it's hard to get back again. And there is some muscle memory if one's already taken a devotional service. But why get off the path? I notice on Parikram Pass, when people take a break, they get way behind. You just keep going, even if you're going a little slow. If you just keep going, then you'll stay ahead of the game. Stay on the path. It's pretty simple. Just keep walking. Okay, number two. All glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all glories to Nityananda Prabhu, all glories to Advaita Chandra, and all glories to all the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I have described one's relationship with Krishna in various ways. This is the subject matter of all the Vedas. Krishna is the center of all activities. Focus. Now I shall speak about the characteristics of devotional service by which one can attain the shelter of Krishna and his loving transcendental service. A human being's activities should be centered on devotional service to Lord Krishna. That is the verdict of all Vedic literatures, and all saintly people have firmly concluded this. When the mother Veda's Shruti is questioned as to whom to worship, she says that you are the only Lord and worshipable object. Similarly, the corollaries of the Shruti Shastras, the Smriti Shastras, give the same instructions, just like sisters. The Puranas, which are like brothers, follow in the footsteps of their mother. O enemy of the demon Mura, the conclusion is that you are the only shelter. Now I have understood this in truth. Purport. This quotation from the Vedic literature was spoken by the Lord, to the Lord, by great sages. And this is quite relevant because faith means faith in scripture. Because scripture is praman, and it's self-evident. It's self-luminous. Self-luminous. It proves itself. It's axiomatic truth. And one has to, as I've said billions of times, accept axiomatic truth in any discipline. Otherwise, you get infinite regress. You just keep retreating. And you never come to a point of saying, I accept certain thing as self-evident. It proves itself. It's self-luminous. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught this, as have many other philosophers in the world, East and West, that you have to have a point from which you begin and you say, this is self-evident, proves itself, and I'll take it as axiomatic. So the Vedas are available, they're very difficult to understand because they're vast, and there are many branches of the Vedas. But Srila Jiva Goswami proves in the Tattva Sandarbha that the Vedas, and which are the Shruti and the Smriti, are the same. Except for the Smriti is more important. And he proves this through Shastra because it speaks to us in a way that we can actually understand what the object is and what the clear path is. It unfolds the real meanings of the Vedas in a way that common people can understand in the age of Kali Yuga. And that's why they're available to us. But they say the same thing as the Vedas. They come to the same conclusion, but Jiva Goswami proves they're more important even than the Shruti. And amidst all the Shruti, he shows how the Srimad Bhagavatam is the ultimate. It's the highest authority. And it's, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, the spotless Purana, the perfect source of all knowledge. And throughout the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who said, Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam. This is the Amala Purana, spotless Purana, which we take as the ultimate authority. And if you have that in your life, you take an ultimate authority, then you'll have some peace. So you'll say, this is where I'll take my guidance. If it concurs with the Srimad Bhagavatam, I'll take it. If it doesn't, I won't. And if you don't have enough focus on an ultimate authority, then you'll become confused. You go in many different directions. So this opening statement by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about the mother who gives this information to us about who is the father. The example is that who can tell you who your father is? Your mother is apt. Then, 7. Krishna is the non-dual absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although he is one, he maintains different personal expansions and energies for his pastimes. Purport. The Lord has many potencies, and he is non-different from all these potencies. Because the potencies and the potent cannot be separated, they are identical. Krishna is described as the source of all potencies, and he is also identified with the external potency, the material energy. Krishna also has internal potencies or spiritual potencies, which are always engaged in his personal service. His internal potency is different from his external potency. Krishna's internal potency and Krishna himself, who is the potent, are always identical. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, in the 7th chapter, talks to Arjuna about how he can understand these truths about the phenomenal world and what's beyond this phenomenal world by hearing from him. And then he begins to give some outline of the different energies, and that's what's being spoken of here. The Lord has energies. And in the Sandarbhas by Jiva Goswami and the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as we can see at the outset, he's showing that God has potencies. And these are unlimited and inconceivable potencies that work in wonderful ways, and there are various categories of energy. This is a different philosophy from those who say that God has no energies. Ultimately, there's only a oneness, homogeneous oneness, and there's no potencies. So there's the potent, and then there's the potencies. And Krishna describes how there's the inferior energy, which is earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. And then above that is the superior energy of the soul. And then he describes how the soul has a particular category of energy and in that he's Kshetrajna, he's a captive within the material body, and he's different from the material body, and he's also subjected to control by either the material energy or the spiritual energy. So he's marginal. He can go either way. Tatastha Shakti. So various energies are described in the Bhagavad Gita. Also, as we'll hear, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quotes quite extensively from the Vishnu Purana, where he, which also describes these varieties of energy that all come from the Lord. But one thing's for sure, it all comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in the Gita, Krishna says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajanti imam buddha bhava samanvitaha. If you can understand this, that everything is emanating from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then your attitude towards the world will change. He said, those who understand this worship me with all their hearts. And they see how Vasudeva is everything. Vasudeva sarvamiti. Everything's coming from Vasudeva. And everything's contained within him. A few more verses and then we'll have some reflection. Krishna expands himself in many forms. Some of them are personal expansions and some are separate expansions. Thus he performs pastimes in both the spiritual and the material worlds. The spiritual worlds are the Vaikuntha planets and the material universes are the Brahmandas, gigantic globes governed by Lord Brahma. 9. Expansions of his personal self, like the quadruple manifestations of Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudev, descend as incarnations from Vaikuntha to this material world. The separated expansions are the living entities. Although they are expansions of Krishna, they are counted among his different potencies. You want to hear the purport? The personal expansions are known as Vishnu Tattva, and the separated expansions are known as Jiva Tattva. Although the Jivas, living entities, are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are still counted among his multipotencies. This is fully described by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Apare mitas tanyam prakritim vidime param jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam daryate jagat. Besides this inferior nature, O Madhyam Darjun, there is another superior energy of mine which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature. Although the living entities are Krishna's parts and parcels, they are prakriti, not purusha. Sometimes prakriti, a living entity, attempts to imitate the activities of the purusha. Due to a poor fund of knowledge, living entities conditioned in this material world claim to be God. They are thus illusioned. A living entity cannot be on the level of a Vishnu Tattva or the Personality of Godhead at any stage. Therefore, it is ludicrous for a living entity to claim to be God. Advanced spiritualists would never accept such a thing. Such claims are made to cheat ordinary foolish people. The Krishna consciousness movement declares war against such bogus incarnations. The bogus propaganda put out by people claiming to be God has killed God consciousness all over the world. Members of the Krishna consciousness movement must be very alert to defy these rascals who are presently misleading the whole world. One such rascal known as Pondraka appeared before Lord Krishna and the Lord immediately killed him. Of course, those who are Krishna's servants cannot kill such imitation gods, but they should try their best to defeat them through the evidence of Shastra, authentic knowledge received through the disciplic succession. And now we'll take some reflections. Anything you've heard so far that caught your fancy?
I like the point where you said we need to have enough faith to just keep, like, while working in a parikrama or something, it's very simple to just keep walking. It may not be easy. So it's important to strictly follow the simple process.
Yeah. I remember once when I was distributing books at O'Hare Airport. I have a lot of memories from that time and place. And we were out on Friday night, which was the most crowded time of the week, and distributing books. I think there was about 20 of us out there. And it became very passionate. And there was a way in which there were a lot of, at that time in America, a lot of U.S. servicemen. And especially in Chicago, there was there is a Navy base called Great Lakes Naval Base. And that's where a lot of people go to get trained to enter into the Navy. So they go there for what they call boot camp, which is a really intense training for people who aren't used to regulation. They start waking them up real early and working them really hard and teaching them how to be submissive and things like that. So generally, when they'd come out of that, they'd be really purified. It was almost like going to Mangalartik or something. And they're also very kind of like innocent people. Like the ones that would join the U.S. military at that level were people from rural areas where they were kind of living a little more simple life and they had no other real prospect except to join the military. And most of them came from God-fearing families and so forth. And when they'd come out of the boot camp and we'd meet them at the airports, they're very purified and very ready to take a book. And some people took exception to that because they thought, you know, only people should only read the Bible or something like that. So they saw us selling Bhagavad Gita and other kinds of books to young Americans who were coming, who had just joined the military. So there were different schemes that people had to try to dissuade these young people from taking books. And one of them was, before they'd get off the bus to go in the airport, they'd tell them all, if you meet somebody in the airport selling books, just tell them no and walk away. And so one night, there were hundreds of them coming through the airport, and one after another, they all were telling me no, like they were supposed to. And became a little discouraged and tried to look for other people. But my godbrother, Giri Jadhava, was near me, and he kept one after another talking to them, and I was thinking, what a waste of time, because they're all already informed not to take a book and so forth. And we got in the van later, we were driving home, and we'd always sort of compare how everyone did. And I didn't have a very productive day. And then Giri Jadhava, and I thought, yeah, he did terrible too. And then he announced his score, which was huge. And I said, how'd you do that? And he said, I just kept going. I just kept talking one after the other. And it just left an impression with me that don't give up. Don't give up when you have something that works. Just keep trying. And there's that spirit Sridhar Swami talks about when he gives a commentary to the verse 10:14:8, in which he says, The duty of a person in Krishna consciousness is to stay alive, because there are so many ways in which our spirit can be killed. We can get distracted into so many other things and then resurface 20, 25 years or 20 lifetimes later. And you know, if we're lucky, it could be a million lifetimes. It's dangerous. Prahlad Maharaj says dangerous to get reabsorbed into the cycle of birth and death. Who knows what might happen next? So best not to get distracted. And there are all kinds of opposing views and opinions. And one can become derailed. So Sridhar Swami says, somehow or other, be inventive, but stay alive. Stay alive in Krishna consciousness. One way you say, what's my duty? Stay alive. Figure it out. So be a survivor in Krishna consciousness. Find out what you need to stay alive in Krishna consciousness and do it. That's your prerogative, and it's your duty, actually, to stay alive in Krishna consciousness, not fall down, not get dissuaded, not get distracted, and so forth. So how do you do it? Figure it out. Figure it out. And keep going. Yes.
Maharaj, today I scanned through the news, and one of the news was In limited over match, it is the slow and steady which wins, not the fast and furious. And this was related to a match, of cricket match. But when I read the title, it actually tells limited over means we also have a limited life. Limited, we have a limited time.
Limited time.
We have also have a limited time. And if we, as you mentioned, that stay steady rather than fast and furious, you know, it resonates pretty well. But you know, you just discussed. I just thought to highlight that part.
Yeah. Be steady, not fast and furious. Which really helps by counting what you do every day. Sankhya purva kanama gana nati bi. Count what you do so you can be dispassionate about it. Your mind might say, now I'll do much more, now I'll do much less. That's the way the mind goes. Today I'm going to do huge, and it's like, I don't want to do anything today. But for the mind, you have to set some boundaries and say, every day we do the same amount, at least the same amount, without stopping. And that's why in Vidhi Bhakti, you have to count what you do. You can't have no counterbeats and just say, oh, you just chant when I feel. That's not Vidhi Bhakti, and that's not progressive. You have to count it and say, okay, this is how many I did today. I finished. At least I did that. That's how you stay alive. And you have to read every day. You have to say, this is how many pages I'm going to complete. No matter what else happens, I'm going to complete it. And you do it. And you have your other practices, and you just do them. You should have one ashtakam. Throw in an ashtakam. You should chant your rounds. Let me start over. You should chant your rounds. Then you should have reading. Then you should have at least one chapter of Bhagavad Gita and at least one ashtakam. And if you can have that in your diet, you could stay alive for a long time. Even when there's chaos around you, even when there's other people seem to be starving, and it's like, no, I'm not that hungry. I'm actually, well, spiritually hungry, but you're nourished. You know, somebody may become malnourished. But if you take your basic diet every day, then you'll actually stay spiritually healthy, which is very important for staying alive, right? Otherwise, you start to diminish your health, and then a virus comes along. Like so many things come along. In the early days, there was this idea, and it came through the devotional communities. One after another, things would come through, but one of them was a get-rich-quick scheme. That I've always heard about. It was jewelry. There was some jewelry assembly you could do, and you could sell it and then sell it to other people, and then blah, blah, blah. I forget how it worked. But in any case, the devotees got all these ideas. Oh, yeah, we'll get into jewelry. And they got really distracted, some of them. And then Prabhupada noticed what was going on, and he gave a talk where he said, if you become focused on jewelry, then you'll become a jeweler. And there was another kind of distraction at one time when there was some information astrologically that California was going to have a major earthquake on a certain date and it would crack and fall off and go into the ocean. So a group of devotees moved away from California and went off into the Arizona desert. And Prabhupada said they left the deities there. It's okay with you, the deities there, you went off in the desert. There's so many ways you can get distracted if you take your eye off of your chanting and your reading and your basic services and things like that. There was more reflections coming, and then Hansapriya has her hand up too.
Babaji, when you said that occupation messenger, that really stuck me. First thing, I felt it was really cool to have that kind of a job, to be a messenger of Lord Chaitanya. And second thing, felt like it takes off so much of burden of you that you're not doing anything, you're just passing it out. It's not up to you to make them take or not, but you're just a messenger. So
yeah, what's the old saying?
Don't shoot the messenger.
Don't shoot the messenger. I'm just telling you. It's coming from Lord Chaitanya. That's what Krishna said. I'm just passing it on to you. Yeah, thank you very much. Good work if you can get it. Hansapriya.
Hare Krishna. So it's so funny you mentioned about, you know, doing it on a daily basis, the same chanting the sadhana. And I had a friend who told me yesterday, so the days like this when you are busy, maybe you should just chant when you are, you know, working, and consider those as your 16 rounds like that. And I was thinking about that, that, you know, there is a reason that we've been given a number and a bead bag and a counting bead to count on. And it's so nice that you mentioned about that today. And it also applies the same thing you mentioned, where it says confusion comes from not applying the principles. So I mean, the chanting for 16 rounds is a principle, and I was thinking that's just a slippery slope. If you just get into that confusion, you won't have a principle there.
Yeah, nice points. And we're lucky that Prabhupada emphasized it so much. Because it's so easy to... You know, this was brought up by Narada Muni to Vyasadeva. He said, in the Vedas, you've given all these little loopholes and exceptions. People will take those, you know. He said, you're going to take them. And you just notice Prabhupada gave so many instructions. And then it was like, you know, one time Prabhupada took a 7-Up on an airplane. And he said, this is very good. It helped my digestion, you know. So the word got out. And next thing, there were big 7-Up trucks pulling up to the temple. 7-Up, that's the regulative principle. It's the Mahavakya, in fact. It can go that way really easily with any tiny little thing. And so Prabhupada emphasized so strenuously, so clearly, about the chanting of the holy names. And so did Jiva Goswami and the other acharyas. The holy name has to precede and follow whatever other rituals we do to actually make it valid and so forth. And if we can fix our mind on a principle that everything comes from this, everything good comes from this, and we can really focus on that. And what you said is also important, to give our give real time, as Satyadev Prabhu likes to say, really be there, be present for the holy name. Take that time to be present for the holy name, because I can also do, as Mahatma Prabhu always says, courtesy japa. And just, yeah, I'm doing it, but I'm not really present for it. But the whole point is be present for it. Then you'll experience that joy of actually being yourself, being a spiritual soul. You have to get that, you have to get that experience every day. Otherwise, you get again plowed under by the mind and by the various modes of material nature. They'll sweep you away. And the ocean is full of anxieties. That the ocean of the mind is just full of anxieties. Of what am I going to do next? How am I going to do this? I observe it. Sometimes when I'm sitting waiting for an airplane, I watch people pacing back and forth on their telephone oftentimes. About to get on a plane, they go, no, I told you, the Henderson file. Why'd you put it in the other place? How come? What are we going to do now? I'd sell it. You know? And I'm just thinking, I'm watching this person and it means so much to him or her at that time. But to me, it's just kind of amusing. I'm watching from a different perspective and I'm thinking, eh, who cares? It's just a stupid file. You know, it's only money. And for that person, they're so absorbed. They think, this is the end of my life. What's my wife going to say? You know, they have these overwhelming emotions connected to these thoughts. But because I'm observing them, then I can apply it and think, well, everybody's like that. Everybody who's connected to the thought process, which is being generated by the three modes of material nature, becomes overwhelmed like that. It's not an individual problem. It's a systemic problem that comes from identifying with the mind that's contaminated by the three modes of material nature. And the only way I can step back from that is through connecting to the holy name on a regular basis. You actually get that perspective by giving enough time to be present for the holy name and hearing at least one mantra and experiencing that prayer that comes a helpless feeling, please help me. And then if there's some revelation, just even a glimpse of some transcendence that, oh, I exist beyond time and space, beyond the mind. If one can have that, then suddenly everything becomes, there's a way that I can deal with everything. All the other ways I have to go through the day, control my senses, deal with problems and situations. It comes from this basis of chanting the holy names. Hari Vamsa.
Prabhu, I have a question, and this question came in a discussion with some devotee friends, and with our limited observation during preaching, and those who we try to preach, and then they kind of go away for a while. We were thinking that the first thing, major thing which happens when somebody goes away from Krishna consciousness is stopping of chanting. That there's such an overwhelming feeling that chanting stops. I mean, he may still be vegetarian, or maybe other regulatory principles also are falling, but chanting, no. Why is that so? And
or maybe it's the other way around. When the chanting becomes lackadaisical, then the impetus to go away. It's almost like it's by default. The modes and the all that rajas enters, it just rushes in. And then one's helplessly dragged away. But if you fortify yourself every day by chanting. But another reason is that if there's a causal son willingness to surrender, then one doesn't reach out to Krishna. Just let me stop chanting because I really don't want to do it. Because one might want to try to make another go at it in the material world. This sort of causeless unwillingness and say, I know if I chant, because sometimes devotees will experience this, yeah, but if I chant, then I have to surrender. If I chant, I'm going to get some transcendental knowledge, and then, you know, what am I going to do with that? I don't want it. I want to be in ignorance. And Krishna helps. Yes. Srivas Prabhu.
Prabhuji, I think you answered my immediate when you brought out that very unique phrase, causeless unwillingness. I just wanted to know more about that. We heard of causeless mercy, but causeless unwillingness was a nice phrase.
Well, causeless unwillingness, it can run into philosophical problems, you know, get into this causeless idea. So maybe just call it stubbornness. And it's based by lingering, what is it?
Indifference.
Yeah, indifference. Indifference. Yeah, that's a related cousin. Stubbornness and independent spirit. There's an enjoying spirit. You know, Krishna answers things so simply in the Bhagavad Gita. When Arjuna asks, Krishna puts forward a perfectly reasonable sketch of the universe and said, it's all based on gratitude. You're being given so many gifts. The gift of light, the gift of your intelligence, the gift of food and water and air and everything. And just show a little gratitude. And he said there's this cycle. And if you just learn to give back and don't just eat things, first offer them with a little prayer and things like that, then you'll be part of the cycle. And you'll be blessed, and everybody will live in harmony. Nobody gets hurt. And then Arjuna wants to know, well, how are people dragged away from this? What is it that dissuades them from acting in a reasonable way? And then Krishna just says so simply. He just says, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajaguna, Samudbhava, Mahashano, Mahapapma, Vidyenam, Yavarinam. It's just lust. And he says, where does it come from? Rajagun. You touched it, and now you're infected, and now you have to become unreasonable for a while and do stupid stuff. And so, it's causeless unwillingness. One has to be careful when one's vulnerable, not to become reinfected. And when Sanatana Goswami left everything and came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu noticed, you still have a blanket. He didn't say anything, he just looked at him. Kind of interesting how, you know, the instruction came so subtly. It's not always such a direct thing, but you notice, hey, he looked at me funny. I should do something about that. And Sanatan Goswami went and traded in his blanket for an old quilt and came back. And Mahaprabhu was unlimitedly happy and then said, "A doctor, make sure that all the disease is gone. Nothing lingers because the person could become reinfected." Yes, from the internet. And somebody wrote me yesterday, a very senior devotee who was watching the Gaur Purnima, Kuladri Prabhu, and he had appreciated the interaction. And then he said, "But I didn't make the cut with the text." He said he wrote in, but his text didn't get read. And now he texted in now. Oh, good.
No.
From yesterday?
Yes. But
okay, let's see if we can redeem ourselves. Not that he's online now, because it's really late where he lives, but...
So this is Kuladri Prabhu. Thank you for today's dissertation. Please ask.
It means yesterday's, right?
Yeah. Please ask the group how they plan to carry on. Strengthening of the institution is gone. Without organization, how will the people find shelter and association if they read Srila Prabhupada's books?
How will you all steadily carry on and keep the ISKCON organized after Kuladri's gone, because he's the compliance officer for all of ISKCON? And I must say, I wonder sometimes myself, if Kuladri wasn't there, how would it go on? Yes?
I would like to say that we are very fortunate, because when Prabhupada left the planet, we had very fortunate to have the movement with very sincere leaders around, and they have set up an example for us, so we don't have to invent the wheel. So we are very grateful. It does hurt to think about it, that we won't have many around after some time, but at the same time, we do have seen them carry on Srila Prabhupada's vision very close to their heart. So by following their example, hopefully, and then Krishna being in our heart, guide us and probably show us the path that we must follow to please our Guru and Srila Prabhupada and the Srila Prabhupada disciple who has given up their youth to make this movement very successful. And since their blessings are there and Krishna's causeless mercy is there, I'm sure things will be gone, even probably more than like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. When he left, Prabhupada actually accomplished so much because he had a faith in his guru. And he knew what exactly his guru would be pleased by. So hopefully you will leave us that mercy, causeless mercy, and we will do best we can. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Okay, we'll send that transcript to Kuladri. Thank you, Hansapriya. There's more. More texts. And we'd like to welcome everyone who's joined us on the internet. Please give them a warm welcome. Hare Krishna. Right here? Hare Krishna. Okay, we got internet, and then we have Manjula Kanta.
So this is Vaikunth Nayak Prabhu from India.
From today?
Yes.
Okay.
Dhanvad Maharaj, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. If one reads Srila Prabhupada's book, one is immune to the confusion arising from different philosophies. That's his takeaway from today.
Yeah, and one of the verses that we sing frequently here at ISV, Helon Dunita Kedaya Vishadaya, starting in that way, emphasizes how, and it's a verse written by Sarup Damodar, says that Mahaprabhu's mercy helps to bridge these various disparities in philosophy that appear in the world. His philosophy is so unifying and so all-inclusive and practical that it helps to bridge the gap, to cover over these discrepancies in a way that devotees can carry on. Okay, Manjula Kanta? And then another text from the internet? And you have, okay, there's lots of feedback.
I wanted to add to what Hansapriya Mataji said about managing without ISKCON. Having read Srila Prabhupada's books and really feeling connected to him when I focus and actually listen to him and I read the book, I realize that the Acharya's blessings are always with anybody who opens their heart to them, any of the Vaishnava Acharyas. We may not have ISKCON, we may not have gurus. There may be a time when we don't have, everything's dismantled. So we may not have the structure that we totally depend on right now. But we still have the Paramatma within the heart, and we have the Acharya in the book. And it's a natural nature that a drunkard will seek another drunkard. The same way one who seeks the Lord will seek another with a similar taste. If I met Shraddha Mataji on a train somewhere in Detroit, and she had a Prabhupada book, my only aim would be to find out where she's going. So in that way, as long as we have the Acharya in one form and another, physical or if not physical, then in Bani, there's always hope that we will come together. We may not be ISKCON, we may be the International Study Group about Krishna Study Group, we may be a different name, but the bhav remains and we will sustain. But maybe not in, you know, not a hibiscus, we may be a rose, but we're still the same flower because our desire to seek Krishna is what Krishna wants. And the Acharyas have, that was the biggest mercy. They left us this Brihat Madanga. As long as we publish these books, as long as we keep their words alive, or as you're teaching us to do, we put it out there in the ether, in the earth, in physical form, we will always find a way to find each other. That's my thought.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, one more from the internet. Okay, you go ahead, and then we'll take the internet.
I was just thinking when Vaikuntha Naipro was saying, I once asked one of my superiors, I was having some problem, I was telling him, I'm going through this or that. He just asked me one thing, are you reading Prabhupada books daily? That's the only thing he asked. And then I thought for a while and I told, no, I wasn't actually. And then he told that if all problems are because you're on mental plane, he was saying. If you come on intellectual plane, then you'll be able to see things as they are. Ideally, he told we should be on spiritual plane. But since that's not possible at this point, but at least we should be on intellectual plane. So that was really...
Yes. Yeah. There are spiritual solutions. The material problems are solved by spiritual solutions. And those, fortunately, are within grasp. We can actually take advantage of those things immediately. It's like water in the palm of your hand. You just have to take it. Sometimes we have to be reminded. Shraddha, you have one more from the internet?
Can I share something?
You may.
Thank you. I was just thinking about Hansapriya Mataji's comment from yesterday about the comfort zone for chanting. And then also today she talked about Prabhupada having given us a process like use a bead bag and, you know, do it properly. And I was thinking about how your mother also knew about your comfort zone. And once when you called her and she...
Yeah, I was surprised. I called her, I was in anxiety. I was at the LA airport. I was having a rough day, rough week, rough month. And I talked to her sometimes, call her by the payphone, tells you when that age was. We didn't have cell phones, kids. And... Even I remember that. And I called her up and she said, how are you doing? And I said, not very good, whatever. And I don't remember all the details of the conversation, but she said, now you listen to me. You pick up that bag with those beads and you put your hand in it and you start chanting. And I thought, wow, Krishna just answered the phone, spoke through her. And I had an opportunity like 2 days before she left the world, because she fasted to death, you know. And she, I was sitting with her and I was just asking her questions. I said, "You remember that time I called your friend?" "Yes." I said, "You know, I was having a bad day and you told me to put my hand in my..." Why did you tell me that?" I said, "What possessed you at that time to, you know, tell me to chant?" And she said, "I saw you left the material world. I didn't want you crossing back over the line and coming back the other way." So she had an intuitive sense. So it's kind of like, it's a good instruction to just follow the simple path. What is the problem? It's the same old answer. Put your hand in the bead bag and start chanting. Don't try to overcome it by making all kinds of fancy maneuvers, so forth. Step back and do what the acharyas do and chant. You have another one from... Okay.
One from Dhameshwar Prasad. He says, "Vaisheshika Prabhu is my hero."
From Dhameshwar Mahaprabhu?
Yeah, or my godbrother.
Dhameshwar Mahaprabhu? You said Dhameshwar Prasad.
No, so sorry. I mixed Dhamudra Prasad.
Oh, okay. Dhameshwar Mahaprabhu.
Dhameshwar Mahaprabhu Das. Sorry. And this is from Houghton in Michigan, Ankit Vora. Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Who's it from?
Ankit Vora.
From Ankit. Okay.
So his question is, if we are living in a condition when devotees are not around and association is far away, is it possible that one will give up chanting? How does one keep the inspiration going to keep chanting? Thank you, Prabhu. You are my inspiration in my Krishna consciousness.
Hare Krishna. You have to be inventive. There's not one set answer, but just like what Sridhar Swami, the great Bhagavatam commentator, says, you have to figure out how to stay alive. So invent some process to connect. I know devotees live in remote areas and they tune in to various programs throughout the day. Try to string together whatever you have to put together so you keep the vibration going. That's the underlying principle. Stay close to the transcendental vibration at all costs. And if your mind resists one form of vibration, say, "I don't like that anymore." Because the mind does that sometimes, even in the spiritual realm. You read in the Bhagavatams, "I don't like this anymore. I want to read." "All right, I'll give you the nectar devotion. How's that?" "Nope." "Okay, how about..." Whatever it is, switch over and keep it going somehow or other. Keep the vibration going. And yes, to answer your question, I mean, it is possible if we get too separated from devotees that we become indifferent to the holy name. It can happen, especially those who are, you know, don't have a lot of momentum already. One thing that I recommend is teach others how to chant. Sometimes if you're in a remote area, if you start a program in your house, and yes, I know, okay, somebody might say, "Oh, I'm not very advanced, how can I do that?" Don't present yourself as very advanced, just present yourself as someone who's a facilitator. And facilitate other people coming into your space, and just share with them, say, you know, "Let's read a little Bhagavad Gita. And let's chant one round together." And when you have to reorganize your living space, it becomes a sacred space. And it also, because other people are looking at it, you start looking at it differently yourself. And you think, "How do I rearrange things here so it looks a little better?" You know, as soon as somebody comes over to your house for spiritual things, they think, "How am I actually living? How am I presenting myself?" And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told this. This is the same instruction he gave to Vasudeva the leper. After he liberated him and he embraced him, Vasudeva became very beautiful by Lord Chaitanya's touch. And he said, "Aren't I going to fall down now? I'm so beautiful and, you know, my body's become radiant and maybe I'll stop chanting. What'll happen? I'll become puffed up and then I'll lose my way." And Mahaprabhu said, "Keep the vibration going and teach it to others as much as possible." That really helps. If you're in a remote area, and some people are, they can't get to the temple, they don't have people in their neighborhood, there's lots of sincere people that will want to come over and listen to what you're doing. You can invite them over to your house. And if they're not ready for Bhagavad Gita or anything like that yet, just bring them over for prasadam. But bring people into your space and make the context spiritual. And then you'll have to step up to the next level and maintain it. Call them over once a week and see what happens. That really helps. Srivas. Oh, you have the mic. Go ahead. Possession is 9/10 of the law.
I was just meditating on what Hansapriya Mataji answered to Kuladri Prabhu's question, and I immediately recollected a contemporary quote by Steve Jobs. He said, "You can't connect the dots looking forward, you can only connect them looking backward. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something, your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever. This approach has never let me down, and it has made all the difference in my life." Of course, he's speaking from his own, whichever realization platform. But I realize that, yeah, we have to have an umbilical cord in our parampara. Unless we are connected there, then the future is very dangling. It's a flimsy, kind of a ground. So we have to always look back at how Srila Prabhupada did this, how his Guru Maharaj did, how our Acharyas did, and then then we are nourished, and then we have all the reasonable faith that it will be okay in the future. Otherwise, it'll be in the air.
Nice point. And as far as making dots go, one can realize also that spiritual practice is so significant that in the moment when you're doing something for Krishna, chanting or reading or distributing Krishna consciousness, it's having much more of an effect on you and other people than you can imagine. And sometimes I find that devotees get overwhelmed. They think, "I'm not doing enough." They think, "Others are doing so much, I'm doing so little, therefore I shouldn't do anything at all." But one thing to realize is that spiritual practice is absolute, and if you're doing sincerely according to your capacity right now, you're making that dot. And you'll realize later that your choice to actually practice something, anything, within the realm given by the Acharya and the spiritual master prescribed for you is so significant that you're actually making that path, that those dots. And Krishna will help them, help you to string it all together. He's the one guiding from within the heart. Yes. A couple more, and then we're going to read a little bit more.
Maharaj, I have a question. As we understand, the solution to all the problems is chanting, but what do we do when we know, when we are... For example, in my case, I have been observing my brother, and he's going through, in India, he's been going through some troubling times, and he gets out of that, and again, he gets into some other problems, and I've been trying to make him or plead him to chant, but he is just not getting to the point to chant. The reasons are different, I won't go into that, but what do we do in those cases? Like you just a few minutes back, you mentioned about prasadam, and I've also mentioned to him that, you know, whenever you are in Pune, you can go to the ISKCON once a week, and you know, you love food, so why not this? And then again, some other reasons come. So in this case, other than being patient and just when he talks to me, shares his problems, from my side, my answer is just the same. It's not wavering, but what else can one do?
Is he listening in tonight? You sure? He might have just heard what you said and be thinking, "Where's my bead bag?"
I'll be very glad if he's listening. But
well, there's not a stereotype answer. It's very complicated how the living entity gets tangled up in the material world, and I always this analogy comes to my mind. I've seen films before where there's somebody diffusing a bomb. You know, the bomb's ticking down, and then you know, it's like, is it the red one or the white one? Which one do I? And they're like, you know, they're like perspiring and click, click, tick, tick, tick. And I see each person has a unique kind of wiring, set of circumstances, and you have to be a little expert how to diffuse that situation and help people. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said to his disciples that you should be willing to give 200 gallons of blood to save one person from the material world. Sometimes there's this feeling like, God, is anybody going to get out of the material world? It's like, especially if you're a Goshtinandi and you're dealing with so many people. And, it's like, I'm excited. And then like a year later, it's like, I quit. You know, it's like, so it's like, ah. And you know, it can be frustrating. But you have to take solace in the fact that great acharyas like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta say these things. You know, it's not easy. And so you have to be inventive. And there are some basic principles in helping people move forward in any science. And one thing is, if you stay connected with them in a positive way, without asking them for anything or, do this, do that, why don't you follow this? Let's take it back to the thing Stephen Covey said about an emotional bank account. Everyone has this emotional bank account. Everyone does. And when you relate to people, if you're aware of the fact that you're either making a deposit or a withdrawal, and you go out of your way to make deposits with people as much as possible, then it's likely that, when you ask them to do something or you recommend something, they won't take offense. Especially relatives, too, it's very difficult to make suggestions unless they're very surrendered to you. In fact, it's even in the Bhagavatam, says that that fathers don't listen to their kids and things like that. And so oftentimes, even it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam that, say, somebody in the family, a brother, becomes very advanced and becomes a spiritual master. Then you can go ask the family, go, that guy, he's not a spiritual master. He's my brother. He's an idiot. You know, they'll think, they see it in a relative way. So it's not so easy. You do have to be patient. And, you know, you can't just make declarations and say, do this, do that, unless you're on that level with people and they're ready to listen to you. But if you show kindness and stay connected, let's ask Shraddha, because she stays connected with a lot of people. That's a fact.
Maharaj, I was just going to comment on the part where Sudipra was saying that he told his brother that go to the Pune temple. So in most of the situations, people won't go. I mean, when they are troubled, they are ready to give up chanting, forget about going now and doing something new to the temple. So instead of that, if we can bring prasadam to them. And I just wanted to share one small incident that Mukharminda recently lost his grandmom. And so before she died, she had to be hospitalized and flown to Hyderabad from where they stay. So his parents and uncles and all, they were all going to be with her there. And his biggest worry was what will happen to their prasadam. And so he called up, I don't know how many places, and finally got connected with one devotee who used to supply prasadam. And he arranged for the 7 days that they were there, or whatever, so many days they were there, that they got prasadam served there. So I was just thinking that, be innovative. And
did that help?
Sorry. I mean, definitely. They did. Otherwise, they would have eaten something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that.
And that's one place you can concentrate on developing that emotional banking out. Bring people prasadam and arrange, make the arrangement for them. Yeah. Manjula Kanta.
Maharaj, I hear a lot of devotees when they are in pain, when they're struggling with things, and we say, how are you, Mataji? Or how is it going? They'll say, pray for me. It's a standard request. It's a struggle sometimes because I think prayer must come from the heart. I believe that it has to come. It has to really come out. I can't just say, well, Krishna, this, just I'm praying for them. So I find it a challenge. But is that very relevant? When someone says, pray for me, does it work only? Does it actually work? First question. Second, does it work only for devotees because we're connected? Does it apply to third people, like my mom, somebody who just doesn't belong to it, but we wish they would? Does my prayer for them work? My chanting
yes,
for
no,
them?
Yes, no, and yes.
Like I hear people, I chant for my mom. I chant one round for my mom, one round for my dad, and then I do 16 for me. I hear all this stuff. Can you make it scripturally sadhu relevant to me?
Well, when Dhruva Maharaj was angry, to say the least, and he wanted to run off to the forest, he went to his mother, and she said, only God can help you. He said, where's God? Tell me where he is. I'm going to go talk to him now. And he said, well, sadhus go to the forest. That's where they find him. He said, see ya, I'm going. And he just took off. And halfway there, Narada Muni showed up and gave him some instruction, free of charge. And it's mentioned there that in the Shastra that he overheard the conversation between his mother and him, and that's why he came. And Prabhupada then brings up the question, he wasn't there. How did he hear it? He said, well, Krishna is within everyone's heart. He's the super soul. And he knows when these things are going on. That's how people get connected to a spiritual master. They have some sincere desire in their heart, and Krishna makes the arrangement. How else would it happen? And so when there's... What? Yeah. So when there's this sincere prayer going on, Krishna takes heed, and it's a good idea to invite people to pray and also to pray for them. In fact, we could form a prayer circle. I know that the Vaishnavas Care Group, I haven't seen it recently, but they had a program when somebody would be ill or just getting ready to leave the world. There was a program that Sangeeta set up so devotees all over the world would be alerted, and they'd put out prayers for that person. And I know at Saddleback Church in Orange County, with Rick Warren, on Sundays, there's this whole wing of the building or a big room or something like that where people meet, and they have prayer requests, and groups get together, and then they make prayers for these
How do
people.
You pray for someone you don't connect with?
Well,
how valid
you
is
do connect by praying for them, that's one thing. But no, they are connected with these people, and
well, like general requests, just pray.
Well, I don't know how general they are. I don't know exactly their system, but they're with the Sangeetas program. You know, these are devotees that everybody knows or kind of knows, and then they put out their goodwill and good wishes. And I just say Krishna's within everyone's heart, and he listens to the devotees. Right? Yeah. Okay, Tree Shop, and then I'm going to read some more.
So one thing that comes to mind from what Mataji was saying was in the second chapter, I think Krishna says that if the descendants don't do prayers for the forefathers, they fall down. So that's also connected. That
yeah, you can see even through Karma Kanda that there are these connections that are difficult to understand from an empiric point of view. But actually, there are connections that we have karmically to relatives and so forth. And there's a way in which when somebody becomes a devotee, generations of the family become benefited also. So there are mystic connections that we may not be able to exactly perceive. But I think even in the process of praying, you're bringing that goodwill and attention to people. And it's by that, the goodwill of the devotees, there's great benefit. Okay, I'm going to read a little more. Yes?
So when people ask us to pray for them, is it karma kanda, considered karma kanda?
No. Well, it depends on what your motivation is. Karma kanda means that you're trying to work within the laws of karma to rectify, you know, certain types of karma. There's a system, karmakandic system, in which by performing certain kinds of activities you can reduce the sinful reactions of certain things that you've done, things like that. Okay, I want to read a couple more verses so we keep within the thread and the flow of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions to Sanatana Goswami. Continuing on text number 11, I believe, 10. The living entities, jivas, are divided into two categories. Some are eternally liberated and others are eternally conditioned. Those who are eternally liberated are always awake to Krishna consciousness and they render transcendental loving service at the feet of Lord Krishna. They are to be considered eternal associates of Krishna and they are eternally enjoying the transcendental bliss of serving Krishna. Apart from the ever-liberated devotees, there are the conditioned souls who always turn away from the service of the Lord. They are perpetually conditioned in this material world and are subjected to the material tribulations brought about by different bodily forms in hellish conditions. Due to his being opposed to Krishna consciousness, the conditioned soul is punished by the witch of the external energy, Maya. He is thus ready to suffer the threefold miseries, miseries brought about by the body and mind, the inimical behavior of other living entities, and natural disturbances caused by the demigods. Did you catch that? He is thus ready to suffer. Okay, I'm ready. All right, 14:15. In this way, the conditioned soul becomes the servant of lusty desires. And when these are not fulfilled, he becomes the servant of anger and continues to be kicked by the external energy Maya. Wandering and wandering throughout the universe, he may by chance get the association of a devotee physician whose instructions and hymns make the witch of the external energy flee. The conditioned soul thus gets into touch with devotional service to Lord Krishna, and in this way he can approach nearer and nearer to the Lord. Yay! Purport. An explanation of verses 8 through 15 is given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Amrita Pravaha Bhashya. The Lord is spread throughout the creation in his quadruple expansions and incarnations. Krishna is fully represented with all potencies in each and every personal extension. But the living entities, although separated expansions, are also considered one of the Lord's energies. The living entities are divided into two categories, the eternally liberated and the eternally conditioned. Those who are ever liberated never come in contact with Maya, the external energy. The ever conditioned souls are always under the clutches of the external energy. This is described by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Daivahiyesha gunamayi mamamaya duratyaya. This divine energy of mine consisting of the three modes of material nature is difficult to overcome. The nitya bhadas are always conditioned by the external energy and the nitya muktas never come in contact with the external energy. Sometimes an ever-liberated person, personal associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, descends into this universe just as the Lord descends. Although working for the liberation of conditioned souls, the messenger of the Supreme Lord remains untouched by the material energy. Generally, ever-liberated personalities live in the spiritual world as associates of Lord Krishna, and they are known as Krishna Parishad, associates of the Lord. Their only business is enjoying Lord Krishna's company, and even though such eternally liberated persons come within this material world to serve the Lord's purpose, they enjoy Lord Krishna's company without stoppage. The ever-liberated person who works on Krishna's behalf enjoys Lord Krishna's company through his engagement. The ever-conditioned soul, provoked by lusty desires to enjoy the material world, is forced to transmigrate from one body to another. Sometimes he is elevated to higher planetary systems, and sometimes he is degraded to hellish planets and subjected to the tribulations of the external energy. Due to being conditioned by the external energy, the conditioned soul within his material world, this material world, gets two kinds of bodies, a gross material body and a subtle material body composed of mind, intelligence, and ego. Due to the gross and subtle bodies, he is subjected to the threefold miseries, adhyatmak, adibhautika, adidaivika. Miseries arising from the body and mind, other living entities, and natural disturbances caused by demigods from higher planetary systems. The conditioned soul subjected to the threefold material miseries is ceaselessly kicked by Maya, and this is his disease. If by chance he meets a saintly person who works on Krishna's behalf to deliver conditioned souls, and if he agrees to abide by his order, he can gradually approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Kamadinam katina katida palita durnideshas tesham jata maina karuna natrapano pashanti utsri jaitam natayadupate sampratam labdha buddhis tvamayata sharanam abhayam mam yungshvat matasye. O my Lord, there is no limit to the unwanted orders of lusty desires. Although I have rendered these desires so much service, they have not shown any mercy to me. I have not been ashamed to serve them, nor have I even desired to give them up. O my Lord, O head of the Yadu dynasty, recently, however, my intelligence has been awakened, and now I am giving them up. Due to transcendental intelligence, I now refuse to obey the unwanted orders of these desires, and I now come to you to surrender myself at your fearless lotus feet. Kindly engage me in your personal service and save me. Purport. This verse is also quoted in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. When we chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, we are saying, Hare, O energy of the Lord, O my dear Lord Krishna. In this way, we are simply addressing the Lord and his spiritual potency, represented as Radha Krishna, Sita Ram, or Lakshmi Narayan. The devotee always prays to the Lord and his internal energy consort, so that he may engage in their transcendental loving service. When the conditioned soul attains his real spiritual energy and fully surrenders unto the Lord's lotus feet, he tries to engage in the Lord's service. This is the real constitutional position of the living entity. 17. Devotional service to Krishna is the chief function of the living entity. There are different methods for the liberation of the conditioned soul: karma, jnana, yoga, and bhakti. But all are dependent on bhakti. Without devotional service, all other methods for spiritual self-realization are weak and insignificant. Unless one comes to devotional service of Krishna, to the devotional service of Krishna, jnana and yoga cannot give their desired results. Purport. In the Vedic scriptures, stress is sometimes given to fruit of activity, speculative knowledge, and the mystic yoga system. Although people are inclined to practice these processes, they cannot attain the desired results without being touched by Krishna bhakti, devotional service. In other words, the real desired result is to invoke dormant love for Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.26 states, Savai pumsam paro dharmo yato bhaktir adhoksaje ahaitukiya pratiyata yayatma supersediti. The supreme occupation dharma for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service under the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. Karma, jnana, and yoga cannot actually awaken love of Godhead. One has to take to the Lord's devotional service, and the more one is inclined to devotional service, the more he loses interest in other so-called achievements. Dhruva Maharaj went to practice mystic yoga to see the Lord personally, face to face. But when he developed an interest in devotional service, he saw that he was being benefited by karma, jnana, and yoga. And I was thinking of the Nagapatnis. They prayed for their husband, and Krishna considered it. Right? It's like, you know, I know. give him a break, would you? Naishkarmyam apyachuta bhava varjitam. The Shobhate Gyanam Alam Niranjanam Kutakpuna Shashvad Abhadram Ishvare the Charpita Karma Yadapyakardam. And also, we see that when first Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya came to Mahaprabhu and told about Maharaj Pratiparudra, he was a little resistant. And then after that, that Sarup Damodar came and said, you know, he's really a good devotee. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, then I'm sure Krishna will bestow his full blessings on him. And Prabhupada explains how, because of the good wishes of these devotees, now, Mahaprabhu's heart softened. So Krishna listens to his devotees. If somebody comes to you and tells you about another person, they're really a good devotee. I mean, you don't know the service they're doing back there. You got to see it for yourself. You know, the next time you see him, you're like favorably inclined. And of course, Krishna knows everything that's going on, but there's a way in which he defers to his devotees. And that's why, you know, we really make advancement by referral. You got to get good referrals. If you get good referrals from the devotees, then Krishna's very inclined to help, right?
So that's why when we sing, we say, Yasya Prasadat Bhagavat Prasadat. The highest referral is the Guru's referral. You get Krishna or you don't.
Yeah, we depend on that, on getting the referral from the spiritual master, from the advanced devotees, and then, you know, Krishna considers. That's how it works. This verse is very important. Naishkarmyam apyachuta bhavavarjitam. It sounds nice too. Nashobate jnanam alam niranjanam kutakpuna shashvad abhadram ishvare nacharpita karma yadapyakaranam. One of the nicest verses to say. It's got some... such a beautiful composition. When pure knowledge is beyond all material affinity, but is not dedicated to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, it does not appear very beautiful, although it is knowledge without a material tinge. What then is the use of fruitive activities, which are naturally painful from the very beginning and transient by nature, if they are not utilized for the devotional service of the Lord? How can they be very attractive? Purport. This is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.12, even after writing many Vedic literatures, Vyasadeva felt very morose. Therefore, his spiritual master, Naradadeva, told him that he could be happy by writing about the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Up to that time, Srila Vyasadeva had written the Karmakanda and Jnanakanda sections of the Vedas, but he had not written about Upasanakanda, or Bhakti. Thus, his spiritual master, Narada, chastised him and advised him to write about the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Vyasadeva began writing Srimad Bhagavatam. Those who perform severe austerities and penances, those who give away all their possessions out of charity, those who are very famous for their auspicious activity, those who are engaged in meditation and mental speculation, and even those who are very expert in reciting the Vedic mantras, are not able to obtain any auspicious results, although they are engaged in auspicious activities, if they do not dedicate their activities to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I therefore repeatedly offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose glories are always auspicious. That's from Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto. And finally, Kevala Gyan Mukti Dite Nari Bhakti Vine. Krishnon muke she muki hoy bina gyane. Speculative knowledge alone without devotional service is not able to give liberation. On the other hand, even without knowledge, one can obtain liberation if one engages in the Lord's devotional service. One cannot attain liberation simply by speculative knowledge, even though one may be able to distinguish between Brahman and matter. One's liberation will be hampered if one is misled into thinking that the living entity is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Indeed, one falls down again into the material platform, onto, because considering oneself the Supreme Person, the Supreme Absolute Truth, is offensive. When such a person comes in contact with a pure devotee, he can actually become liberated from material bondage and engage in the Lord's service. A prayer from Bilvamangal Mangal Thakur is relevant here, another very important verse. Bhaktis tvayi stiratara bhagavan yadi syad daivina nakpaliti divya kishora murtihi mukti swayam mukulitanjali sevate sman dharmarta kamagataya samaya pratiksha. O my Lord, if one engages in your pure devotional service with determination, you become visible in your original transcendental youthful form as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As far as liberation is concerned, she stands before the devotee with folded hands, waiting to render service. Religion, economic development, and sense gratification are all automatically attained without separate endeavor from the Krishna Karnamrita. And just because, was it, who brought this over? Srivas Pandit? Prabhu? I want to just bring your attention that what we're reading there in this chapter called The Process of Devotional Service is a recount of what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally taught to Sanatan Goswami. And you'll find by reading this chapter and the other instructions from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that you get an entire composite of the psychology of one advancing devotional service, the various steps that one has to take, the various pitfalls, and you'll be able to fortify yourself and to sustain a drive. You have to have a sustained drive that'll take you to the end of the game. So you have to read this. You have to read this over and over again and get this clear understanding of what it takes to make it to the all the way to the end. And this will help. This will, I keep using the word fortify, like it fortifies you from the various other distractions that can come in to your life. And then you'll see that these instructions are all consistent throughout the Bhagavatam in the teachings of Lord Kapiladev. And I know we're down to the wire here, but we have this other conversation which is remarkable. I mean, each one is a lifetime study in and unto itself. And Devahuti starts off and gives the mood of one who's approaching a spiritual master. She's approaching her son, who happens to be the Supreme Personality of God. And listen to what she says. And if you can imbibe these words in the mood in which she's saying them, then your path on bhakti becomes very easy. Devahuti said, "I'm very sick, 3.25.7, of the disturbance caused by my material senses. For because of this sense disturbance, my Lord, I have fallen into the abyss of ignorance. Your Lordship is my only means of getting out of this darkest region of ignorance, because you are my transcendental eye, which by your mercy only I have attained after many, many births. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the origin and supreme Lord of all living entities. You have arisen to disseminate the rays of the sun in order to dissipate the darkness of ignorance of the universe. Now be pleased, my Lord, to dispel my great delusion. Due to my feeling of false ego, I have been engaged by your Maya and have identified myself with the body and consequent bodily relations." And from her sincere requests, then Kapiladev tells her everything. And it's right there in the Bhagavatam. And if you read that section, you study the third canto of the Bhagavatam, your material life is finished. If you study it as hard as you study C++, or I don't know any of these things, JavaScript. Yeah, then you actually imbibe this, you drink it in, and it becomes a part of your being, part of your basic psychology. And that by the power of the Bhagavatam, you can actually go the distance in devotional service in this one very lifetime. That's the power of the Bhagavatam. So we're the recipients of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. We have before us a veritable feast that one has to develop a taste for, so that people are used to eating garbage. But like crows eat garbage. The Bhagavatam says this. But if we develop a taste for this feast, we'll see it grows before us, and we will not be able to comprehend our good fortune, how much we have, just within Prabhupada's books and the Maha Mantra that we have. If we take those two things seriously, more seriously than the average bear, then you'll be more advanced than the average bear. And you'll advance and go back home, back to Godhead by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's grace. Go premanande haribo
marman natare marman natare marman natare marman hey natare marman natare marman natare marman natare marman.